point until we've clarified issues with the county, and also try to find out where the $100,000 ongoing is coming from, since we have such a small pool of that. I would prefer to wait, so I vote no.
Okay, my second amendment is to allocate $200,000, and this is one time, to Portland Parks and Recreation to continue the what's turned out to be the very successful teen programs and expanded community center hours. During the winter budget monitoring process, the council wisely funded an extensive effort by Portland Parks and Recreation to reach out to teen youths in Portland. And as I think we know, this is all a segment of our community that we all know needs expert outreach in order to effectively engage. Certainly as a father of a teenager, I know how challenging it can be to effectively engage teens. And Parks has done an incredible job of doing this. And when we requested the support in the winter bump, our thought process was that we would do an evaluation of it and bring it back to council at a subsequent point based on the success or lack of success of this program. What we can say is before we even had a chance to do that evaluation, it's been wildly successful. I think I put in each one of your tables there an interim report. This has worked exceedingly well, and right now it will expire on June 30th. And as you know, that's only partway into summer. So the $200,000 would keep these outreach programs and expanded community centers going through the end of September. And I think just some of the statistics I can tell you is that on April 6th, over 400 teens turned out at Park Rose High School for a breakdancing competition. It was a huge success. A citywide teen retreat is scheduled this month to bring together 60 teens from diverse backgrounds to prioritize programs and parks focused on youth and to form teen councils at multiple community centers. Mount Scott Center has had a slam poetry workshop, an event called Jazz Up Your Jeans, and multiple dive-in movies at the pool. Montevilla took a program to the Ortiz Center in the Cully neighborhood that drew 45 teens who had never before participated in a parks and recreation activity. You may be aware right now we have a teen idol competition that started several months ago, and it's culminating in June 16th, and it's been wildly successful too. I think we've had over 1,000 teens participating in that.
And you're a judge in that.
I'm a judge and the finalist, yes.
You play the role of Simon? Or?
No, I'm not going to be a Simon, no, I'm sorry. So
that went in the middle of it.
Like I said, before we had a chance to bring you a full-flown evaluation, we have seen this has been successful. The genesis for this was really Lieutenant Harry Jackson, now retired, but somebody who I did several ride-alongs with and saw many, many kids on the streets, especially on the weekends, and looking at our community centers and other places and seeing them closed at the hours that these kids are out there. So I think we need to keep these centers open now till 11 o'clock on Fridays and Saturdays, along with the programming, too. You can't just open the doors and expect kids to come in. You got to do the effective programming, and that's what this $200,000 would do.
Did you make a motion?
Yes, I moved that. I guess I forgot to do that.
Second.
Normally the discussion comes in. So I would say pretty much the same thing on this that I did the last, that contingent upon what happens with the county, I could support this up to June 27th. Is that the?
No, the funding right now that we approved in the winter bump goes through June 30th. So this $200,000 is to go for July, August, September.
I'm talking about the time that we have to amend the budget.
Oh.
Is that through June 27th? Up to June 27th.
Yes.
But again, great program. Your articulation of it, I think, makes the case for why it is a very effective program. But again, we're facing issues that are new to us in this, in terms of our budget cycle that the county has placed at our doorstep, including them telling us they're going to leave dead animals on the street and cut the sobering station in addition to these various treatment programs. And I'm just not comfortable making a commitment to spend anything until we kind of know how that plays out. And that'll be in the next, I would think, couple of weeks or 3 weeks. But at that time, I'd be more than happy to have this discussion again.
Well, again, my response would be that, you know, I appreciate what you're saying, but I, this is an issue about keeping these programs, successful programs, going through the summer, and I think that should be the focus of our decision on this one way or the other.
I support this. I think it's a good program and obviously gets results. I'd rather much spend the $200,000 this way than the extra police patrols because they're having problems. So.
So you're, Mayor, you're comfortable in the context of these discussions supporting
yes.
this? Never let it be said that I don't see a train coming. I've reconsidered my position.
Yes, I think we're done with the discussion part. Call the vote.
Adams.
Summer activity is really important. I think the concerns about having a holistic discussion with the county is important, but I think having a late night place for folks to go with activities overrides my concerns on this specific one related to our discussions with the county. Aye.
Leonard.
And I couldn't agree more. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye.
Okay. Your stick-to-itiveness is inspired.
Mr. Mayor, before Commissioner Saltzman introduces his next amendment, I'd just like to clarify for us and for the record that the $200,000 will come from contingency and reduce the amount of contingency unless another source of that money is identified. Same with any other amendments for the general fund.
Have you identified a source?
That's fine with me.
Okay.
Thank you.
The last amendment I have comes out of the last week's budget hearing, and that is to allocate $85,000 for an improved pedestrian crossing at Southwest Capitol Highway, Bertha Court, and Southwest 18th Drive. As we heard about this pretty forcefully from both the Business Association at Hillsdale, the Neighborhood Association at Hillsdale, Neighborhood House, which will be operating new affordable senior housing called the Watershed at this intersection. It's a deceptively safe intersection. It has a signal that covers four of the five lanes, but the fifth lane does not. And the fifth lane is what has 30,000 cars a day going through this intersection. And with the housing about to be built across the street, the potential for something tragic to happen will only increase. This is also a high traffic route for students going to multiple schools, students going from Robert Gray to Reiki or Wilson or reversing that. This is the route they go to. So it is a safe route to school. And I think we heard pretty overwhelming testimony that this is really a disaster waiting to happen. So I'm proposing to allocate $85,000 for this improved pedestrian crossing.
Second.
Stop right there.
We vote.
What is, has there actually been a study done at that intersection?
There has been, and this does not rank in the top 25 or top 50 most dangerous intersections. We just need to be really clear about that. But traffic safety is an art, not a science, and I think that the neighborhood and Commissioner Saltzman have rightly pointed out that there's development that will be occurring. And this particular omission in a traffic signal on an intersection is especially dangerous because it gives you, with the traffic signalization that is there, it gives you a false sense of security. And the only reason I think that there hasn't been more injuries there is because longtime residents know of it. These new residents won't, though. And I'm really concerned that we will have injuries and deaths there, and I'd like to prevent it. Having said that, I just also want to say, as Transportation Commissioner, there are these kinds of intersections all over the city. But I'm an incrementalist, and I think we should, I think the case has been made here, and I'm going to support this. But we got lots of other needs around the city as well.
Further discussion. Please call the vote.
Adams.
Thanks for bringing this forward, Commissioner Saltzman and the good folks at Hillsdale. Aye.
Leonard.
I am going to support this, but I do have the concern that, and I'm very aware of that, there are intersections where people have actually lost their lives that have asked for these kinds of signaling that has not happened in. And generally speaking, in the parts of the city that are less organized than in Southwest, politically by that I mean. So because of their silence and lack of sophistication, we're not installing and passing anything today to make a street that actually has had fatalities on it safer for them. That bothers me a lot, as I told some of the residents out there the other night. I'm increasingly concerned when you go east of, it's mainly 82nd, but maybe in some cases east of 205, of the conditions of the streets and the lack of sidewalks and associated with poverty, which is fairly unique in Portland. And in this next year, I'm thinking a lot about some way to break this cycle of paying for improvements for safety purposes, of which this is an example, but also includes sidewalks and streets. But I am thinking very hard about somehow doing something different in terms of financing those projects than what we have up to now to get them done. I just thought I'd take this opportunity on this discussion to make that point, and I hope that we can bring more equity to the entire city soon in terms of safety improvements, sidewalks and streets, and walking lots. Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye.
Thank you.
I have a minute. So I move that we use $670,000 of the contingency to prevent the cuts in residential street cleaning.
Second.
This is coming out of contingency, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
What other obligations have we made? One of my concerns is I think we've also requested and have not identified a source, $800,000 for Block 5.
That's correct.
So where are we going to find the money?
Could you give it may be useful. Can you tell us how much we've spent at the 3.8 today? How much is left?
Your two prior actions committed $285,000. If the 670 were added, that would be a total of $955,000 out of the 3.8, which would leave remaining about $2.8 million, a little bit above that in the contingency. And that's of the contingency that is not reserved for something else. There are additional amounts for parks capital projects, for example, and unforeseen reimbursables and a number of things. But this amount, the 3.8, which would move to 2.8, is your contingency that's available to you for the full year for whatever purpose you deem appropriate.
Yeah, just to pick up on the point the mayor just raised, I think all members of this council have been interested in Park Block 5 and the potential of a donor stepping forward with about a $1.6 to $1.7 million contribution contingent upon that being matched by the city. PDC has put in $800,000 of that, and I believe that all members of the council, through their execs, have all agreed that this should be something that we should come up with the other $800,000 for. Now we had a donor. Apparently, that donor didn't work out, but now we have a new donor who is making that money available. So this $800,000 would be necessary to meet that match, to do the Park Block 5 the way the citizens want to see Park Block 5.
And I'm interested in pursuing that as well, and I think the resources, the 2.8 that we leave in contingency, provides us the adequate resources to do both that and the other unforeseen contingencies that might come about.
Excuse me, Repar, Ken Rust, OMF. As we're talking about contingency, I just want to make sure it's very clear that we always have, as part of the general fund appropriation, an amount in contingency that's there for emergency and unforeseen purposes during the course of the fiscal year. To start appropriating that now for a particular purpose is a little bit contrary to policy and puts us in a position where we may not have the ability to fund some emergency unforeseen, something that doesn't justify going into our general reserve, but it's something that we expect could occur during the course of a fiscal year. We have a very small amount of contingency in the general fund relative to the size of the general fund. We've always been able to manage it successfully, and I have confidence that that will continue. However, we don't know all the things that might happen to us during the course of the fiscal year. So I would just urge caution as we think about this contingency. It doesn't really mean that we don't have a need for it or it's not prudent for us to keep it unreserved and inappropriate at this point in time. And it's been a consistent financial practice of the general fund to have those dollars for that purpose. I want to make sure that's clear to council.
Very clear.
I thought we had you were going to be going back and taking a look at what the different options were.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's be honest. The options are where do we cut more from PDOT that has been cut every year for the past 7 years over CSL. And I'm not interested in cutting anymore if we have the resources at hand to do so. And I think a $2 million contingency, and I believe that there'll be more money coming in with the financial forecast update. Could be wrong, but that's what I believe based on what's happening with the state financial forecast revenue picture. So I think that laying our folks off and scaling back the program and then having to try to scale it back up and moving people back is disruptive, and I'm tired of cutting transportation. These are not luxuries. These are basic services that we need to be providing. There are plenty of jurisdictions around the United States and around the region and in the state of Oregon that use general fund for transportation. The city, you know, the PDOT manages the right-of-way. The city earns millions and millions of dollars from the franchise fees for access to the right-of-way, but PDOT generally doesn't get those. So we're starving for money while the general fund gets money from our management of the right-of-way. I'm working hard to get new money at the state level, and if that doesn't work, I'm going to propose a local, you know, funding source options. But in the meantime, we got to keep basic services going.
Well, and to be clear, I actually agree with the sentiment of the mayor and Commissioner Saltzman about looking at options. And so I'm going to support this, but on the condition that the suggestions that I made earlier that should have happened do happen, beginning right away, that that PDOT have an effective labor management system. I'm not talking about labor management, but an effective one where you bring people to the table and you open up the budget from the top to the bottom and have input from all the employees about what they think might be the best focus of resources. And it's great to have a consultant, but a consultant shouldn't override that process. I mean, you guys are the ones that make PDOT work, and I would expect all of you to have the commitment to get in and make hard decisions so we don't end up in this position next year, because I'm very mindful this is one-time money and it funds that program for another year. So, this is the same kind of approach we've taken at water, at BDS, at the 911 center. It's hard. Managers sometimes don't like it because they get second-guessed by employees, but that's what the process is about, and I expect that that would happen.
If I could just clarify, the concern I have about the contingency is not necessarily this request for PDOT, but if we're talking about Park Block 5 and obligating another $800,000 of that contingency, that's what concerns me. I think when we start when we approve our budget, we should start with what we think is the appropriate amount for contingency. When we get into the year-end closing or fall bump, if we have additional resources, we can use that opportunity to commit to that and maybe make that a priority. But I was concerned about further taking down a contingency that's necessary at the beginning of the fiscal year for us to be able to manage the general fund. But the PDOT request, I think, would fall within the excess amount that we typically have, that is right now above what is the normal contingency that we have in the general fund.
I would like to see what those other options were before we...
Yeah, I guess I'd like to see that. Well, I mean, in the context of the $200,000 we gave to parks, I mean, this just now, I would hope that you would understand this is not unlike that. It is a basic service provided to neighborhoods, and it's a basic service people expect. And I guess I'm feeling like I'm not comfortable having this rushed process before July 1st where everything starts flying and people try to figure out what the appropriate option to take is. I'd rather have give that process a year and have them come back next year with a more thoughtful, laid-out plan. And plus, the mayor's going to be gone. I'm going to be gone. I don't know what others are doing in June. And there's a likely opportunity that one or both of us won't be here simultaneously when this does come up, and I'm concerned about that.
The one-time funding for transportation will help, but I just feel compelled to note that the problem with PDOT and its funding structure is an ongoing problem, and this is one-time money. It's not ongoing money, so the problem will continue in future years. I just want to make sure that's clearly stated to the council.
If we want to strengthen the motion by, and I'm interested if Commissioner Saltzman or the mayor are interested in putting some contingencies on the allocation of the $670, or some conditions, not contingencies, conditions, such as they do an effective labor management system right away. They get those options, and they all go through them with the idea in mind maybe to address the bigger picture for the next budget cycle.
Well, I guess, you know, what's weighing on my mind is, you know, everything that's been discussed here, but I guess, you know, I'm now weighing this with the $800,000 Park Block 5 and where we're going to reconcile those two. But also, I guess I heard from Sue Keel that the issues around the impact on the sewer system have been addressed, or they're going to at least address it to the best they can, and that it's reducing sweeping from 6 to 4 days a week, so it's not totally eliminating it, and that no layoffs were going to occur. So
6 to 4 times a year.
Oh, 4 times a year. Okay, but that no layoffs were going to occur. So I don't think layoffs are really an issue here. So I guess that's where my thought process is. It's weighing this versus $800,000.
We have a variety of, and just to be clear, we have a variety of funding that's one time, a bridge to a discussion of a different funding source in the future. My first choice is an increase in the gas tax and the vehicle registration fee and statewide. Legislature will be done by the end of June. If that doesn't work, then the conversations around our alternatives will come forward. But to cut programs back more, and I need to emphasize that this Bureau has been cutting, and we've gone through a lot in this process, but we provided all the cuts year by year over the past 7 years and all the positions that have been cut in management and overhead, and there's always room to do more. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying, but the reason that such a basic service is, one of the reasons that such a basic service is offered up is that's kind of where we're at in terms of, and when we asked DIE consultants, and we're going to be coming back to council with a full briefing, but when we asked DIE consultants to look through everything in the Bureau and opportunities to cut fat or waste, and they offered up some, and we've made those cuts in this budget cycle, because again, we got the budget, the original gap amount way down. We're still left with this gap, and again, I think it's a basic service that the city will provide. PDOT's a good deal for the general fund in terms of how much of an asset we manage and how much general fund resources come off of those franchise fees for access to the right-of-way that we don't get a guaranteed portion of the right-of-way franchise fees. I just think that this is a really basic service, and I'd ask for your support. I guess we just need to vote.
Let's call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
No.
Potter.
No.
What are you doing, a tie?
It fails. We'll have to wait till Commissioner Stein gets back.
So he'll be the deciding vote.
Any additional motions? Is that it?
No, not for me.
Okay, if there's no further discussion or other amendments, then we'll be hearing from the public. Is there any member of the public who would like to testify on this item? Do you have a sign-up sheet?
We do, and we have 12 people who'd like to testify. If you'll come up three at a time. First is Laura Craig Bennett, followed by Fred Richard Beadle, and they will be followed by Rob Wheaton, Michael Daner, and Ken B. Thank you.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you each have 2 minutes.
Good morning. My name is Laura Craig Bennett, and I work with the Youth Voices Initiative at Portland Community Media. And so I'm here to advocate today for you to restore funding for this Youth Voices Initiative in the budget. The Youth Voices Initiative is comprised mainly of two programs, the Oregon Learning Lab for Information Education and Adventures in Television. And Adventures in Television is our summer youth media project. We're actually getting started on that right now. And we work in four different community-based organizations with about 60 youth to provide week-long intensive youth media production workshops. The young people participating in Adventures in Television learn to tell stories about their lives using technology. Adventures in Television creates a space where young people can feel comfortable expressing their own voice as well as learn about how their peers feel about the community they share. Excuse me, nervous. And Ollie is our school year mobile youth media project. And we go out to about 25 schools and community-based organizations every year, and we bring mentors and video production tools to these centers. And these are areas where young people do not otherwise have access to these tools. The people participating in Ollie learn to use video technology as a tool to teach others about their classroom subjects and voice their ideas and opinions about issues in their communities. One thing the Youth Voices Initiative does is it engages young people with their community. An example of that are the Woodlawn Elementary School Dreamers. This is the I Have a Dream Foundation. Last year they came to us with a group of fifth graders who wanted to do a television show in our studios, and it's called Pop Talk. So Mayor Potter attended Pop Talk and was interviewed by some of the students, as well as Dan Wyden from Wyden Kennedy, Dr. Daniel Bernstein from Portland State University, and a couple other wonderful people from the city of Portland. And through this unique opportunity, this really provided a group of young people from Northeast Portland with an opportunity to interact with, ask questions of, and learn about some leaders and innovators in our community. And I'm also happy to say that this year the Pop Talk Dreamers are back for another season, so it's been an ongoing opportunity for these young people to produce a television show. So basically, what the Youth Voices Initiative can also do is it can challenge young people to use technology in a meaningful way. And this also happens in our Adventures in Television summer program. With this intensive experience, they're allowed an opportunity to kind of have a group of young people that they feel comfortable with expressing themselves and their ideas. Last summer, we used the Vision PDX survey sort of as a starting point for discussion around what are your experiences living in Portland. And one group of our students created this thought-provoking piece that openly discussed race, class, and how these factors have affected their experience in the city of Portland. Funding from the city of Portland will allow the Youth Voices Initiative to support and expand its services to the young people in Portland. This proposed increase of $66,000 for the 07-08 budget will allow us to serve over 20% more underserved youth in Portland. In addition, this support would leverage increased foundation and corporate involvement for the project. So thank you all for your attention to this matter.
Thank you. My name is Fred Scheich, president of the International Foundation for Alternative Research and AIDS, and I'm also a board member and a producer at Portland Community Media. I'm here to ask you to restore the funding of the $66,826 in the proposed 2007-08 budget for Portland Community Media's Youth Voices Initiative Education Program. This program includes OLLIE, the Oregon Learning Lab for Information Education, and Adventures in Television. These programs provide in-school, after-school, and summer programs with a priority on underserved youth. The Youth Voices Initiative provides services in partnership with schools as well as community organizations such as Portland Impact, Girls Inc., New Adventures for Youth, the Police Activities League, Portland Parks and Recreation, the I Have a Dream Foundation, El Programa Hispano, FEED, Learning and Gardens Laboratory, and Metropolitan Family Services. I will read some of the quotes in the process of evaluating these Youth Voices initiative. These are from the teachers and instructors after school and community-based organizations. These are some of the quotes. The students were completely engaged in the project in a way that we don't often see. They absolutely were more enthusiastic about learning. They were noticeably positive improvements in their behavior, attentiveness, and teamwork. Students who were often in conflict worked cooperatively on this project and grew in their ability to find common ground in working as a team. I saw a big self-esteem and confidence boost in the students. I heard back from other teachers that their students were excited about staying after school to work on their projects. Particularly for students with English as a second language, the video projects gave them a different medium for communicating and they flourished. Girls hadn't often thought a lot about how women were portrayed in the media, but through the editing process, they came to understand these choices involved in how women are represented. I have a lot more, and there certainly were hundreds of great comments that I was excited about. In fact, what I would like to say is that I just can honestly say that I've had a life-changing experience in just the review of this program. I am proud to even be slightly affiliated with this project, and as a producer of PCM and a member of the board of directors. The skills and experiences offered through this Youth Voices initiative are especially important to the youth who are economically disadvantaged, have special needs, or for other reasons at risk for poor outcomes in life. OLLI and Adventures in Television Services prioritizes services to these youth. I urge you to restore the full funding of the Portland Community Media Youth Voices Initiative for 2007-2008 budget. Thank you for your time.
Mayor Potter, commissioners, my name is Richard Beadle. I am business manager for Laborers Local 483, and I'm here to advocate to restore the $670,000 for the residential street cleaning. I feel this is a real example of being penny wise and pound foolish. This is really, in reality, a cost shift. It's not a cost savings, and it comes at a considerable expense to the taxpayers. The first victim of this cost shift is the Bureau itself, and I've got a whole bunch of issues that the Bureau has identified as increased costs caused by this reduction in residential street sweeping. I think everybody has a copy of this. If they don't, I'd give them a copy. And that was identified by the Bureau. But there's also other victims of this cost shift. The neighborhood is another victim of this cost shift because they're going to have to live with increased filth in their neighborhoods, dirtier streets. There's going to be increased flooding because of plugged drains and possible traffic problems because of that issue. Also, we understand that what's not going to happen is that the public's not going to pick up this debris. It's going to be picked up by the city. And what we've got to determine is what's the most cost-effective way to pick it up. Well, where it's going to go next is it's going to go into the catch basins. Well, this is going to be a Vactor truck issue. We're going to have to send a Vactor truck to pick up this. Now, only a portion of it's going to be picked up this way. The rest of it's going to get into the sewer system, and it's going into the lift stations. These lift stations all have wet wells. They're going to fill up. When they fill up, they pump the sewage to a higher level and let it gravity flow into the plant. What's going to happen is it's going to fill up with debris, and this is going to lead to increased clogging of the pumps. These are going to have to be taken care of by our millwrights. They're going to be taken care of on a call-out basis, which will be time and a half. This is increased cost. And they're going to have to do this by actually physically getting into the pump and digging out this debris with their hands. Also, from the lift stations, that's only going to capture a portion of it. It's going to go into the big pipe. This is the next place that this debris is going to flow to. Now, the big pipe, of course, is actually a big storage unit for stormwater. And this stuff's going to settle at the bottom of the big pipe until enough rainwater happens to wash it into the plant. It's going to continue to turn septic and get increasingly acidic and increasingly toxic. And then what we're going to have is this stuff during a storm flow is going to flow into the treatment plant. Well, the treatment plant is first line of defense against this is bar screens. It's going to end up on the bar screens. It's going to be raked. It's going to be put into bins and trucked off to Eastern Oregon. This is going to be expensive. But that's only a portion of it. A big bulk of it is going to go into the treatment plant itself. It's going to get into the clarifiers. It's going to get into the digesters. And what it's going to do is replace capacity and reduce detention time. We are already challenged at the treatment plant with capacity and detention times. This is going to aggravate that problem. And at the same time, when we try to haul this stuff away after it's been digested, we have to use polymers and chemicals to dewater this stuff in order to put it in trucks and haul it to Eastern Oregon. As you can see, we're going to have to deal with this in an increasingly expensive way. So we're not saving $670,000 here. What we're doing is spending a whole lot more of the tax dollars' money trying to shift the costs in other places. This is not a good business decision. We need to rethink this issue.
And Richard, I just want to apologize to you and the folks that you represent that we should have gone back to you after the mayor's proposed budget came out and had a discussion about options for the cut. And we just dropped the ball and wanted to apologize for that.
If I could have one more minute, I'd like to talk about the human cost of this cut as well.
Sure.
Now, we're all wearing black armbands, and the reason we're wearing black armbands is because we're in mourning. We had this announced to us, to this crew, a couple of days ago. Now, I asked to have seniority lists given to me so I would know where people could bump to, because I was told there was not going to be any layoffs, but I had to know that for sure because no one knew it for sure. They called the crew in. They alerted them that their jobs were going away. They didn't know for sure where they were going. They didn't have seniority lists to be able to tell them where they were going, and they could not assure them they were even going to keep their jobs. That night, one of the crew members, the AEO-1, who was particularly upset and concerned because he thought he had nowhere to go, and he loved doing his job, died of a heart attack that night. That was a sad situation. And I'd like to ask for just a moment of silence in honor of this man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, folks.
Next are Rob Wheaton, Michael Daner, Kenneth B. They'll be followed by Eldon Farlow, Michael Kucha, and Mark Sperling.
Please state your name when you speak.
My name is Rob Wheaton. I live at 443 Northeast 67th Avenue. As you guys are aware, I work for Labor's Local 43, which is how I'm privy to this information. However, what I'm here to speak about is my concern as a citizen who happens to live behind a plaid pantry, which generates lots of garbage. Now, my neighbors and I, we try to keep the streets as clean as possible. You know, we do work together. I'm pretty active in the community. But unfortunately, we just can't get it all. There's a lot of debris that's generated both from this, the construction that's going on at Fred Meyer's at 67th and Gleason, and you know, just general street traffic. Gleason's a pretty busy street. Last night I attended my neighborhood community meeting, the Community Association Center neighborhood. No one there was aware of the street paving or the street cleaning cuts. I'm concerned that the citizens aren't fully aware of exactly what's going to happen and the impact of on their neighborhoods. Now, I heard that this is going to be reduced somewhere between six to four times a year. But when I've been privy to the plans, and I see cuts of up to 50% for certain neighborhoods. And I'm sure that, you know, again, we're going to be looking at the more politically savvy neighborhoods getting serviced, while those like my own center that's not very politically savvy. Are not going to get serviced. So I'm very concerned about that. That's all I really have to say. Thank you.
Good morning. Michael Daner. I'm here in a twin capacity, both as a representative of Laborers Local 483 and also as a cyclist. First, with respect to the cuts that were discussed to the street cleaning program, I just want to mention that the Bureau, Commissioner Adams, as you're well aware, has been carrying vacancies for quite some time. And as a labor union, of course, we're very pleased when our members can avoid being impacted by the loss of a job. So we're glad to see no one's going out the door. On the other hand, it's not entirely accurate to portray this as a no-loss situation, because when the Bureau is carrying those vacancies, it cannot accurately be said that these are surplus positions. I mean, these are vacancies that have been in dire need of being filled for quite some time. So I know you're well aware of this, but I want to point out it's while our individual members are protected, the Bureau, of course, is impacted. These really are cuts. I want to put on my cyclist hat now and talk for a moment about the impact to the very large community of cyclists in Portland when you reduce street sweeping, as well on residential streets or more larger thoroughfares. Cyclists probably more than anybody spend a good deal of time in that that area of space contiguous to the curb. And in addition to pedestrians and motorists who will be impacted by reduced sweeping, cyclists are going to have increased safety concerns about riding in debris. Those will be greatly compounded when you talk about leaf season and when you talk about any kind of snow and ice event where you're putting sand down. As anybody who's driven in this town knows, for quite a period of time, after a snow and ice event, that sand is moved by motorists from the crown of the street into the space next to the curb. And so there is a very large accumulation of that material. And I really think, you're going to see two things occur when you reduce sweeping. You're going to see potentially more claims against the city by cyclists who are going to be upset that the city has put the sand down and have accidents, unfortunately, because of that. But also you're going to see a lot of cyclists spending more time driving in traffic, in the lane of traffic, in areas where cars like to be. And so you're going to see greater car versus cyclist conflict and aggravation probably on the part of both. So, thank you.
My name is Kenneth B. I work with City as a sweeper driver. And as a motorcyclist, now, as a motorcyclist, after the winter or before the winter, I like to see the streets clean. But when I drive my motorcyclist during the leaf season and during the winter time, you got slick leaves, you got the gravel, which is very dangerous for a motorcyclist, and or bicyclists too. Now, as a sweeper driver, I also like to see where I sweep, the neighborhoods are clean, looking good. Citizens are coming out all the time saying, all right, good job. I have visitors from the Orient wanting to take pictures of how clean our streets are. Now, if you make this cut, that's going away. You're going to have citizens, visitors going back saying, hey, that's the dirtiest town I ever seen. A lot of them are seeing the downtown area or our very public areas. They're not seeing neighborhoods. Now, these neighborhoods are where our people stay. Now, if you don't have those gutters clean, they're plugged, they have to walk in the rain, they got cars coming by splashing them with this water. Would you like to live that way? I don't. I like to see my streets, our city of Portland, clean. Thank you.
Thanks, folks.
Next is Eldon Farlow, Michael Kucha, and Mark Sprinling, and they'll be followed by Farrell Richards, Tyron Goodgame, and Don Bach.
Hi, my name's Eldon Farlow. I work in city of Portland for street cleaning. They have touched on a lot of things that we need to discuss, it's very concerning to me, to my family. I have children that ride bicycles. I ride motorcycles myself, and I have friends and gatherings. But anyway, what I'm getting at is when we let these streets, residential, go, I worry about them plugging up, and you do have the water standing. And right now we have conflicts with bicyclists, motorcyclists, car traffic, and I think all we're going to do is just aggravate it more. We're going to have a bigger number, more casualties. It's just and more lawsuits. And I just think it's something we need to just make sure we understand everything that's going on. And I, that's basically what I have to say. I want to thank you for listening.
I think your point on the liability is a potentially increased liability is a really good point. Thanks for bringing that up.
Michael Kusha, Bureau of Maintenance, Day Street Cleaning. And I just want to make a couple comments on the cuts to our department. I'm going to quote from the proposed budget document, the mayor's message. It's a quote of, "Portland's economy is the healthiest since 2001. At the last full budget monitoring process, also known as BUMP, the city council approved $23 million in one-time requests for bureaus. Currently, the city's facing $83 million in unmet annual infrastructure needs and repair to maintain its roads and parks and other community assets. While we have taken steps to fill some needs, I'm going to propose that in the future we commit 25% of day of any unanticipated beginning fund balance, also known as surplus money, to infrastructure. Apparently, there was $37 million in available general fund resources for new requests this budget, and the 06-07 and 07-08 are budget years that did not require spending cuts to balance the general fund. Duties of the street cleaning day employees meet citywide initiatives, the mayor initiatives of community safety as employees respond to weather emergencies, and also as far as safe streets, assisting with safety and maintenance projects. There's money available and a couple somewhat questionable spendings that we could have used this money for to not have a cut within our bureau. $200,000 cultural organizing project for the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, $250,000 in support of neighborhood business districts, $1.3 million to Multnomah County for jail beds, $500,000 for voluntary substance abuse treatment for inmates at the county jail, $600,000 reserved for sustainable business plan for Office of Sustainable Development. General fund projects, funding for PDOT was $4.31 million. $250,000 to the Oregon Ballet Theater to send them to New York City to perform. $200,000 to start up Human Relations Commission. $10,000 to parks for movies in the parks, and $640,000 to parks for community programs, including education, outreach, and planning. $60,000 to parks for golf advertising, and $60,000 to parks for utility worker and customer survey. I guess my main question is, why is there a $670,000 package for city employees in a budget year when the aforementioned requests have been approved? Why is there a cut? It doesn't seem necessary at all. It seems like there's money. We just need to go for it, and it just doesn't make any sense. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Mark Sperling. I'm at AE01 for street sweeping. What I do is I remove 150 yards of debris, excuse me, a week. You cut that from seven sweeper drivers down to four. Where's that stuff going to go? It's going to go into the sewers. And then, like Buzz said, you're going to pay for it another way. We have other leaf districts. We got 17 special neighborhoods that we do. During leaf season, they get attention. Nobody else in the city will get attention, period. When those special sweeps for leaves happens, what if there's an emergency? There's an emergency call every day for us to go sweep it up. Sorry, you gotta wait. the cycle for a sweeper driver is today about 45. Every 45 days, they make it through the city. It'll go from 45 days, now it'll go up to 60 to 90 days. That doesn't include if somebody gets sick or hurt or takes vacation or whatever. When it snows, you cut down your, you know, we lost eight positions. You lose eight snow plows. You lose eight people to pick up the gravel. Just takes more time. The gravel ends up in the catch basins. This is not a good cut. I personally remove all this debris. I take it to Hillsborough. That's what I do. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
And last we have Farrell Richards, Tyrone Goodgame, and Don Bach.
My name is Farrell Richards, and I work for Day Street Cleaning, and I'm one of the positions that's getting cut. I just wanted to bring to your attention the fact that street cleaning isn't just the street sweepers. I think, as Mark was just saying, we do snow and ice response, we drive the plows, we put down the gravel. We also have an emergency response vehicle response to, like, say, if there's a vehicle accident, there's a spill of fuel or oil, they take care of that. If somebody calls in, there's broken glass in the bike lane or on the sidewalk, we would take care of that. We do brush cutting along the roadsides, take care of sight hazards. If somebody can't see coming around a corner, we go out there and make sure they can. We maintain pedestrian walkways and stairways, and we do a lot of mowing. Like, for just for one visual example, like Willamette along the bluff there. You know, part of what makes Portland beautiful, you see all these, like, roadside, it could be all overgrown with weeds, but we're out there mowing it and taking care of it. So I just wanted to bring to your attention that it's more than just the street sweepers, and it does have a very human effect. And I commend you for bringing up that, you know, talking more between labor and management needs to happen, because it didn't happen at all. You know, we hear last Wednesday there's going to be a cut of eight or nine jobs, and then Monday afternoon, we get called in. You were the eight people whose positions are being cut. And so here I am Wednesday. I'm probably not getting laid off, but that's as much as I know. So it's not good communication, and I think it would be great if it improved. Thanks.
And I'm committed to making those improvements. So I apologize for the poor communication.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioner, my name is Tyrone Goodgame. I'm also a sweeper operator for the city. I've been sweeping for approximately 8 years. I've been with the city for 12 years. With all due respect, Mr. Salzman, the catch basins, the drainage problem will not be solved. The consultant work they did, there would be so much problem with drainage problem, sewer problem. I sweep approximately 300 curb miles in the city of Portland. That's what I do. You're going to take my 300 curb miles and my other two coworkers' 300 curb miles and give it to four other sweepers. I go through the city, my maps, my curb miles, 5 to 6 weeks. That's what it takes me to go from map 1 to map 18. You're going to give that to my coworkers and expect them to do that during leaf season when we are also doing special sweeps in Eastmoreland, Laura Hurst, Buckman, Northwest, Southwest. We're keeping that area, but we are eliminating sweeping areas like North Portland, St. John's. They would get approximately maybe two or three times a year. This is not right. This is not a good cut. This is not a people's cut. This is just not right, sir. I will have a job, but it's just not the right thing to do. So thank you for your time.
Members of Council, Mayor Potter. First of all, I want to thank you for the action you took on Hillsdale Signal. That's great. I want to talk about street sweeping from a citizen's point of view. I think we need a lot of street sweepers when we've got snow events. I think we need a lot of them when we have leaves, and where there's a lot of leaves on the streets. But I don't need a street sweeper coming down my street in the middle of summer when there's nothing on the street. It's like mowing the grass in the winter. You don't need that. And I, you know, it seems to me what we've got here, you know, I'm only, I'm not an expert in this area, but it seems to me what you got is you got a workforce, and so we just set up, well, it got so many days, we got to do it all over the summer. I'd like to see it, you know, and this is probably a huge management change, but let's put the street sweepers into action when we need street sweepers. And then when we don't need them, during the summer, we don't, my street sure as heck doesn't need to be swept in the summer. And, you know, we talked about the political people in the Southwest. Mike Roach, Rick Seifert, and I were out Saturday picking up garbage on Capitol Highway, Barber Boulevard. You know, we didn't ask the street sweepers to go out and do that. And we can do more of that in terms of self-actuating. But I think looking at what we're doing with our resources and how we can manage them differently, I think is a key issue here. And the other thing is involve the neighborhoods. If I had a choice in my neighborhood, I believe we would far rather see the money spent on a signal than more street sweeping, or taking the street sweeping we could save, which isn't much because we don't have many streets that are local improved. We got a lot of unimproved local that don't get swept, but we could use that money other ways. So involve the neighborhoods in this discussion as well, because it's not just a labor issue. It's a city management issue. And, you know, I understand the way we've structured ourselves and with labor, it's really tough to do this. I've run businesses. I know what that means. So it's not something's going to get solved in the next 6 months or a year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That's all.
Okay. I would like to entertain a motion to approve the tax levies. This is the language. The city shall levy its full...
Excuse me, Mayor. We need to approve the budget first.
As amended.
We're going to vote to approve the budget as amended.
So moved.
Adams.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
I'm serving notice of possible reconsideration of that vote at the next regularly scheduled council meeting. Our rules require that I serve notice of if I'm in the majority of a vote of a possible reconsideration, and I'm serving that notice. I may reconsider this vote at the next regularly scheduled council meeting.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
you'll see next Wednesday.
A substitute budget.
It doesn't affect this motion that passed it, but our rules do require that if you're going to reconsider a vote, not in the session, that you have the vote that you serve notice at the next regularly scheduled session. So that's next Wednesday at 9:30.
I just have a couple of questions about, this is a meeting of the budget committee, not the city council, so I'd have to ask the city attorney what that means, Ben. Because next week is not going to be a meeting of the budget committee.
Well, we'll convene ourselves as a budget committee.
I see.
We'll just call ourselves back into order as the budget committee.
I think there, excuse me, Nancy Hartline Financial Planning, I believe there is only one vote to approve a budget in local budget law.
Our rules allow for reconsideration. That's part of our parliamentary procedure adopted by the council. And
The parliamentary procedure that you're citing to is for the processes as the city council. It's not clear that they do apply to the budget committee, which
and guess
is,
who decides
is,
that?
A, the is council, a process.
The council, a majority of the council actually decides that.
But the budget committee process is a function of state requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the timeline is now. It may be that what you're proposing to do is something that could be taken up when this goes forward. I understand this is coming back before the council with an opportunity for further discussions at later dates. Before,
but as I pointed out earlier, some of us will be here and some of us won't, and we're lacking a person here today that will change the outcome of one of these votes, and it's my intention to have that vote, unless, of course, any of my other two dissenting colleagues want to reconsider their motion. But my intention would be to bring this up next Wednesday and have a vote when Commissioner Sten is here.
And at that meeting, we will have an answer to the question of the parliamentary aspects.
But maybe a companion question would be is, how do we reconvene as the budget committee next week?
We just convene ourselves as the budget committee. The majority of the council.